This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Maybe it's just that you don't know how to use social courtesy.
Oh, that's old-fashioned.
Watch how
Lizzie Post
and Dan Post-Senning
act as host and hostess. They know that courtesy means showing respect, thinking of the other person, real friendliness.
Hello.
And welcome to Awesome Etiquette,
where we explore modern etiquette through the lens of consideration, respect, and honesty.
On today's show, we take your questions on inviting someone to a graduation with no celebration afterwards, weeds in your neighbor's yard, baby showers with a lot of hosts, and inviting someone who has just lost a child to a baby shower.
For Awesome Etiquette community members, your question of the week is about inviting spouses to weddings when you're not close with them.
Plus your most excellent feedback, etiquette salute, and a postscript where we explore courses for various dinner parties through the Emily Post cookbook.
All that's coming up.
Awesome Etiquette comes to you from the studios of our home offices in Vermont and is proud to be produced by the Emily Post Institute. I'm Lizzie Post.
And I'm Dan Post-Senning.
Because I had my first, like, awkward and defeating moments where I'm, like, 99% sure that, like, bots and AI, like, took me to the point of, like...
Oh, no.
Yeah. Of, like, no return.
Don't be
of,
defeated.
Like, deflated, defeated. Like, I can't get a real... I don't think I'm talking to real people in this customer service chain that I am in, which I will not... say what brand it is with, but it is just so deflating. Like, I'm noticing my questions aren't actually being answered, but I'm always being sympathized with and asked if I have any questions. And I'm just like, this is not like the very amazing experience that I had and talked about with the Weebly customer service that was awesome, that I will connect to a brand.
But, missing that sincerity, that magic ingredient, are you?
The human being! Like, I am going to feel really bad if these are real human beings, but it doesn't feel like that. It doesn't have that feeling. And it's noticeable at a certain point. And when the problem hasn't even been dealt with, like, in days, you know, that starts to feel like, wow, okay, what's going on here? And there are some issues where that will be the case. But I think often you get a real projection, you know, that sort of thing. And so I don't know what's going on over at this company, but I feel defeated. I feel like there's nothing I can do but sit and wait and hope the problem goes away.
You are reminding me of a discussion that we had when we first started talking about AI and AI content on this site when the chatbot sort of made its grand arrival. And there was a hint of a suspicion that I had about AI in general, which was that in some ways I think that it might focus our attention on the premium that is the human experience.
Yeah, that's true.
If you can ask an AI program to write in the style of a Hemingway or produce visual art in the style of a Norman Rockwell or something like that, that on some level you need that unique human perspective to even mimic. That yeah, an AI can mimic something, but there has to be a something. There has to be a there ultimately. And I think the more that we experience a simulated interaction, the more we're going to start to really key on what makes a human interaction so special. Who knows? It might be revealing. It might end up driving us back to each other in some ways. That's a very hopeful reply to running into a commercial bot.
What I'm about to say might be a little more depressing, but my, and I promise we'll make it positive before we hit the questions. But I felt there was this moment. I don't mind having to, you know, be sorted out through a system and have that be some kind of AI interface that I'm working with, you know, that I don't mind at all, where it's like you eventually get to a live person. But there was a moment in that particular process where I was aware, and it, I mean, it literally said that I was dealing with a bot. There was no, you know, fake person with an email and a picture and all that kind of stuff. This was like an actual, you're in a chat and you're talking to, you know, a system right now. And I got so frustrated because it said, describe your problem. And then it didn't give me enough characters for me to describe my problem. And I got so mad that I was willing to type less than gracious things and hit enter. And it broke me in that way. And I felt so, I really look at that moment as like, wow, I, knowing that I wasn't talking to a human, was willing to get mad in a way that I don't think I, A, like doing, or B, would do if there was a real human on the other end. And I felt like it was just conditioning me to practice releasing that bad in not a good way, not like the way where you write the angry letter and then you tear it up kind of way, or you like say the thing to your best friend so that you don't say it to your partner in a constructive venting session. You know what I mean? It felt like, wow, Lizzie Post, you need to watch yourself. Like, and not like in a scolding way, but in a, that was revealing. And that wasn't something that I want to continue down a path of. And I want to be mindful of that and think of this as a moment to practice those good skills rather than let them totally break down because I'm having a tough week and I'm trying to get answers and I can't get them. You know what I mean?
I'll tell you, I'm ready for a courtesy setting for our Alexa at home.
Yes, yes.
Where Alexa doesn't work unless you're being nice to them.
Pleasant or, yeah, like and using your P's and Q's.
Particularly like it because there is this family dynamic where there's oftentimes a almost a competition for Alexa's attention, or someone will play a song that'll remind some of the little ears in the room that they would love to hear one of their songs. And there are some courtesies around interrupting each other, giving multiple yes. commands, and even just the, for my way of thinking, a courtesy setting might address the tone of voice that uh-huh. you use, if that's possible. I know that a lot of the AI I'm dealing with now can rank sentiment based on
I'd
tone
be happy
and language
if you
choice.
Could say that again with a pleasant tone and the word please.
I don't need that kind of scolding, but I could use
okay,
it just
good,
not
because I could just picture
not
it.
Functioning. I could see it just not yeah. responding if
until
my kids
you
are
hit
yelling
the right
at
tone.
It.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. I could also see it saying things like, "I'd be happy to play that Taylor Swift song right after I play this song." Like, you know what I mean? Where it like lets you know kind of the order that it's in, although even that would be an interruption to whatever the other person had asked to play.
Although but, I like what you just said. That would
you know
solve
what I
a
mean?
Lot
We're getting
of our problems.
There. We're getting there. We're getting there. Or you could just know that if you asked it while it was playing something, maybe it wouldn't interrupt the music that was playing, but would allow you to state the thing and it kind of cues up it next in line or something like that. But I can imagine, I'm picturing your girls in particular, like having music on and then each, like you say, being reminded, wanting the other song. And how many songs do you get in a row? How do we share this? You know, whose turn was it first? So, you know, just there's a whole thing there.
And as we start to escalate our command giving, our, yes. like you say, that conditioning that you would hope doesn't happen, the practice of I'm just louder, more rapid, more frequent, more demanding.
More direct. Yeah.
And because it's not a human, there's no one checking me. Or oftentimes there's less accountability in that social way yeah. that I think we count on.
Yeah. So self-check for me, good moment to look at my own reaction, interaction, where it hit me in the week.
Good self-reflection.
I really don't think I should be reaching out to customer service when I'm very frustrated. Think first. Take Emily's advice. Think first. Dan, do you think that we could probably help some of our listeners with some advice today?
While I could talk about the emergence of AI all day, we do have some questions to get to. Let's do it. Awesome Etiquette is here to answer your questions. You can email them to awesomeetiquette@emilypost.com. Leave a voicemail or text at 802-858-KIND. That's 802-858-5463. You can also reach us online. On Substack, you can post a comment to our Monday post. On Instagram, we are at Emily Post Institute. And on Facebook, we are The Emily Post Institute. Just remember, use the hashtag AwesomeEtiquette with your post so that we know you want your question on the show.
Awesome Etiquette gets support from Storyworth. There are some stories about your mom's life that you truly never get tired of hearing. From hilarious to heartfelt, tear-jerking to plot-twisting, Mom's retelling of the events always brings a bit of joy. Just in time for Mother's Day, we here at Awesome Etiquette found the perfect gift that can capture all of your mom's stories for your family forever. It's called Storyworth. Storyworth helps you preserve precious memories and stories from your mom or a mother figure in your life for years to come. Here's how it works. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick. What was your first job? Who was your first crush? Storyworth makes the writing process a breeze. All your loved one needs to do is to respond to the email prompt with a story. Long or short, it doesn't matter. I did this with my mom and it was really, really rewarding. You'll be emailed a copy of your loved one's responses as they're submitted over the course of the year. You'll get to enjoy their retelling of the stories, some you probably already know, or maybe the ones that you're surprised by you haven't heard before. After that year of fun discovery and reminiscing, Storyworth compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book that you'll be able to share and revisit for generations to come. You can even keep a copy of the book for yourself. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift that you all will cherish for years. Storyworth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/manners. That's Storyworth, Storyworth.com/manners. It's manners with an S, to save $10 on your first purchase. And now, back to our show. Our first question is titled Grief Over Graduation Invite. Good day. I can't find the answer to this anywhere, so I'm hoping you can answer this. My nephew is graduating high school in a few weeks. However, they, I'm guessing this is his parents, instructed our family, including my mother, who is grandmother to my nephew, that only ceremony, no cake or refreshments prior to the ceremony or after. Due to sister-in-law's parents are in town, and to avoid any awkwardness. I told my brother this is the equivalent to inviting someone to a birthday party and just coming with gifts for an hour, no refreshments or cake will be served. How best to word this, as I find this to be tacky, classless, and rude. I am not driving over an hour to sit in a hot gym. Your thoughts, please. Lucy.
Lucy, thank you for the question. And it sounds like there is some real awkwardness going on in this family situation. It sounds like people are not feeling good about the way this graduation ceremony, and it sounds like lack of reception is being received or handled. And there are a couple of questions that come to my mind as I hear the question. And without ready answers to those questions, my first piece of advice is that as a guest, when you're not feeling good about a situation, you want to control what you can control. And I think of that in two ways. One is, and maybe control is the wrong word, but management of your emotional responses, whether that's noticing what they are and deciding what you're going to act on and what you're not, or whether it's actually trying to look for ways to feel differently about something. Controlling your emotional response is one thing, but then the other is you have a lot of control in whether or not you decide to go. And if you've been invited to something that isn't appealing to you, and it can be all kinds of things, you don't necessarily need to share those reasons with anybody. If being invited to a graduation itself with no reception around it means there's a lot of travel for very little interaction or engagement and maybe not being very comfortable. Some graduations are enormous.
Yes.
You don't have to go. There is no requirement that you attend. Now, I understand when we're talking about nieces and nephews, that's a close enough relationship that we also start to layer in some family expectations there. And I definitely hear some potential issues within the family that I think are also worth thinking about, maybe worth addressing, maybe in relation to this event, maybe separate from it entirely. But from an etiquette standpoint, really controlling what you control is the way that you respond and whether or not you decide to attend or not. And I think knowing those things can really help manage a lot of the other stuff that might come later.
Dan, what I think might end up being a very, as we sometimes call them, saccharine sweet or Pollyanna solution to this, and I don't know if it's going to work given that there's some reference to awkwardness, but and I don't know where that's coming from or how it might impact things, but I'm
between hearing, the grandparents you're talking about.
But maybe between the grandparents, or there's some reason that the parents aren't wanting to have all the relatives over at the same time, and that's where my idea might fail if there's a really strong reason for that. But if it was just because, oof, it's tough hosting house guests and then planning a party on top of it, what if our dear Aunt Lucy here offered to throw like a little cake and punch reception? It doesn't have to be anything big, nothing hugely taxing on Lucy, but providing if Lucy had a space or was even able to, you know, secure. Sometimes I've loved a lot of graduation parties I've gone to that have been in parks. Somehow that has been a theme in my life, is that a lot of friends end up going and grabbing a grill and a couple park benches, or reserving them if you have to reserve them, and doing that for the day. And it's been really fun. But I think there could be some options if that awkwardness isn't about the relationships between the people. Again, a little sweet, a little Pollyanna, a little hopeful, maybe not possible, but I wanted to put it out there just in case.
I like the way you're thinking about this, because it acknowledges something that I keyed on in the question as well, which was that potential, what is described as awkwardness between the sets of grandparents that looks like it's one of the issues that's being navigated here. But it also has a real etiquette foundation. And the second issue that I had identified with this question is that it's really hard to give any host direction on who to invite.
Yeah.
Sometimes within family, you have some standing. You could have a careful and respectful conversation and do it, but it's tricky. And in general, we're, as guests, not in a position of giving hosts a lot of direction about who else they should or shouldn't invite. It's generally not a good idea. And what you're talking about is seizing that host role a little bit, or offering to play that host role, so that you would be in a position to include people that it sounds like Lucy is interested in having included, herself and maybe her parents as well, in a celebration of that graduation and not just being in attendance at the ceremony itself. Mm-hmm. The reason that I like acknowledging that awkwardness is that, to me, it also allows for us to ask the question of whether or not there is a discussion that this family could be having about that awkwardness, and if there are ways that the family can get together and avoid that feeling. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I would want to have that discussion in and around an important event like a graduation. I don't know if I would want that discussion to color whether or not people are attending or how people feel about it as the flare-up moment around that discussion.
Mm-hmm. But don't connect them, in other words. Yeah.
If I was Lucy, I would maybe think about, where is that problem coming from, and is there a way that we could talk about it and maybe work out some kind of accommodation or solution so that in the future – maybe there's a college graduation coming down the road, and in 4 years, maybe the family can work to a place where everybody could celebrate that together, even if everybody doesn't get along all the time or even particularly like each other. But maybe there's a way we could build that relationship as a family in a way that we could celebrate some of these important events together. And who knows? Maybe that ends up bringing the family together as we go through a few of those things, or as they go through a few of those things.
One alternative thought too, you know, sometimes it can help to like just flip that negative feeling to a positive one. If it gets you there, great. If it doesn't, let it go. But sometimes a lot of people are like, I wish I could just send a gift and not have to go to the thing. And I'm just saying that might be your like way out, Lucy, is you don't have to go to the thing, but you send a great gift or a really meaningful card with a nice smaller gift, something like that. There's always that avenue too. We know there are a lot of graduations happening over the next few weekends, and this is a really big moment in someone's life. And I think, Lucy, you asked for our thoughts. The closing thought we want to end on is just to remember that for your nephew, this might be a really big moment. And anyone else who's kind of maybe feeling that, oh, I don't want to sit in that hot gym. If you think about the person you're honoring and celebrating, if that gets you to a place of wanting to go and sit in that hot gym, then, you know, celebrate that with gusto and feel good about it. If not, like we said, you could always just send the gift in the card, another option. Those are our thoughts, Lucy. Audience, please, if you have thoughts, if you have solutions, if you have ways that you've worked a similar problem, please do let us know. Send us your feedback. Lucy, thanks so much for the question.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Our second question this week is about a plant problem.
Huh.
Hi, Lizzie and Dan. I love your show so much and tell everyone about it. Thank you for being awesome. I have a strong background in botanical science and an ethical commitment to protecting natural resources. I noticed in one of my neighbor's yards an unmaintained area between their rear fence and the alley. It is a sizable patch of Japanese knotweed. Japanese knotweed is a really cool plant native to the volcanoes of Japan, where it grows roots into tough volcanic rock and is one of the first colonizers of recent volcano eruptions. It looks a bit like bamboo. Its growth habit means that it can overcome nearly any obstacle in its spread in my Midwestern climate. It has been known to destroy building foundations and roads, and it suffocates all plant life in its way. It has been categorized as prohibited by my Department of Natural Resources, DNR, which means that not only is trade banned, but legally property owners must take action to remove it and prevent it from spreading. The DNR has no capacity or intention to enforce this law. I have the tools, knowledge, capacity, and drive to fully eradicate this patch of Japanese knotweed. It would be a fun project for me, and it would likely save the alley, which I can clearly see from my deck, from crumbling before my eyes over the next few years. To establish ground cover and keep weeds from coming back to this area, I would be happy to install some fast-growing native species that would benefit local animals like birds and bees. I have never met the neighbor whose land this is. How would you broach the subject with them? I know people are territorial about their property, but this land is clearly abandoned. It is absolutely full of garbage. I could fill an entire contractor bag in about 20 linear feet of the alley. I want to be respectful of their property, and I realize this is my problem, not theirs, that I am asking for help with. I know it's weird to ask something like this on an introduction, but it also seems disingenuous to go knock on their door twice. I live in an inner city, and neighbors don't just stop by. I do know a few neighbors, but not many, and I've been here 2 years. Any advice would be much appreciated. Thanks, Michelle.
Michelle, you want to come live next to me? You can like come over and do all kinds of like plant and property
Lizzie
mitigation.
Post.
I want Michelle as a neighbor. Please knock on my door and say, can I help you with something? That is amazing. First of all, Michelle, I want to thank you for such an interesting and informative question. I could have listened to that and listened to more of that. Experts, fanatics, write in with your questions about things. Include some of the background. This was phenomenal.
Okay, Lizzie Post, can I interrupt? I have to interrupt you.
Of course you can. I'm just like praising. Go for it.
Because Pooja, my lovely wife, has been telling me and teaching me about knotweed just this last week before this question came in.
Man, things are getting connected lately.
And something that was not included but I found very interesting is that knotweed is edible.
So really?
One of the ways to deal with your knotweed infestation is to eat your way out of it.
To harvest it.
Anyway.
Interesting. Oh, wow.
Back to the etiquette.
Oh, wow. I'll admit, I can't quite get a sense for how this property is and if you're actually able to identify an owner and find them. And so if you are, great. And I think I would just go up and say, hi, I'm a neighbor who lives in the area. Just like you told us, you know, this is who I am. I'm like really into plants. And I noticed you have I might put it as I want to like walk the line between like super invasive, you know, like amping up the drama of it and also still have it be clear that this is a not wanted thing, that this thing can really wreak havoc and cause a lot of problems, even though it's edible and apparently kind of very cool that it can grow the way it does. Oh my goodness. But I would just go up exactly as you've told us, state who you are, what you've noticed, that you would love to take care of it for them and like repair it and make it into a better spot if they are so willing to let you try. Like, or do. Maybe don't say try, say do. Mm-hmm. Go with Yoda on that one. But that's how I would approach this, because I think essentially you're offering to do like lawn and garden care. I think that's a nice and generous thing to offer, and you have the skills and the time and I'm guessing the resources to be able to make it happen and turn something that could have been destructive into something a little nicer.
I agree 1,000%. I was thinking about what an easy request this is, or what an easy ask this is to make. And just because it's an easy ask and the obvious to me good answer for the property owner would be, yes, please go for it, do it. As long as you're ready, if that answer is a no, to be respectful and accept it as their decision and their choice with their property. Mm-hmm. You've mentioned that there's no capacity or intention to enforce the law, that the DNR regulations about it are really intended to communicate to people how destructive it can be and to encourage them to do their best, but that it's more of a, we're informing you and letting you know than telling you have to. Mm-hmm. And in the absence of that real have to, it being their choice, you're being prepared to accept that and respect that, I think gives you all of the range and latitude that you need to make your request, which is ultimately beneficial for the property, their property, the public property, your view, your experience living next door. The benefits redound to everybody, and that makes it much easier.
Yeah. And for me, Dan, I would be impressed with like a simple version of that where the benefit is just, hey, I noticed this destructive thing and I'm kind of a geek at this. Yeah. I would love to take care of it for you. I don't think you have to, correct me if I'm wrong, go down kind of a list of all the destruction it could be doing or a list of all the benefits that might come from getting rid of it. I think just kind of your enthusiasm for willing to tackle what is probably a not even known project that needs to get dealt with, you know what I mean? I think is just the shining star in this that would win someone over. And again, as Dan said, you just don't try to push it, accept a no. If a no comes your way, let it go. But I love this. Hi, can I help? Can I come help or do this thing? It's great.
I recognize the issues that Michelle's talking about here with actually finding the person to contact, that it's not necessarily obvious who the owner is, or they're not somebody that they've had any experience or interaction with in the past. Yeah. I like to think of the power of a well-written letter as being a really great way to make contact with someone. If you can find an address for them, maybe on some kind of parcel viewer or town records about property ownership. Sometimes you can get an address and a name out of those kinds of records. And drafting up, as Lizzie said, a short, direct, positive letter and sending it to that property owner at the address that's publicly listed is a pretty reasonable way to reach out to a property owner that you've never met before, explaining that you're a neighbor, what you're interested in. And I think you might be pleasantly surprised at the potential impact that receiving a physical letter might might generate.
I never replied to it, but I still have a physical handwritten postcard of someone who was looking for people who might be interested in selling their house, and they had specific needs that would allow them to convert the house and make it accessible for them. And my house like fit those needs, and I really couldn't sell or wasn't looking to at the time. But I still have that handwritten note just because it was really nice.
Like, it's amazing, it was, right?
It's like I just keep not throwing it out when I go through like the list of stuff in that little pile.
Michelle, thank you so much for this question. Our answer is getting longer and longer, and we clearly all have some gardening to get to. So thank you so much, and please let us know how it works out.
We really felt sorry for them. One look was all we needed to tell us that this charming young couple didn't know which end of a bulb was up. Thought we'd be good neighbors. Tell them what they're up against. Give them a little friendly advice. I broke the bad news gently.
Ah yes, the magnificent Trolley Sour Bright Crawler, also known as Trollicus Brightolus. The worm's captivating neon colour makes it an easy gummy prey.
Trolley!
It's a surprisingly sour, invitingly chewy, staggeringly snackable species unlike anything else found on this planet.
Eat me!
Delicious. Visit Trolley.com to shop now.
Trolley, eat me!
Our next question is titled Hosting Hitch. Hello, I am one of 15 hosts for a baby shower. A lot of people don't know each other. How should all the hostesses identify themselves so the guests will know who is hosting and who's just attending? Thank you, Patricia. Ooh, that's a big group.
It is a big group. And when I first read this question, I thought to myself, well, hosts identify themselves on the invitation. And then I thought to myself, 15 names is probably a lot to put on an invitation.
I have a thought for this one, but I'm curious. Do you, where did your mind go after realizing 15 names on an invitation might be a bit much?
Well, because of that, I was thinking about taking the credit on the invitation and giving it to a group of friends and family or some sort of description
yes.
like that. That
yes.
That greatly simplified, but also let people know that there was a not small group of people that were all working together to make this happen. And then yeah. I would really focus on playing roles at the event itself that helped identify who the hosts were. And those might be roles that you identify ahead of time. I'm going to manage this game, and I'm going to manage that food, and I'm going to take care of greeting. I'm going to take care of the thank you note list. Or it might be more about the way you play your role at the party of being someone that's exactly doing that yeah. internal checklist, greet, introduce, check in periodically with people, and that you really demonstrate it with your action. With there being 15 hosts, I'm not as worried about securing credit for any individual as being sure that the experience is well and coherently hosted.
Maybe you won't like my next suggestion.
You're thinking name tags, aren't you?
I'm thinking name tags and identify yourself as a host. I actually think it's really nice to know who your host is. As a guest, one of your responsibilities is to talk to a host. And being able to identify them, whether they are one of two, or one of 15, I think is a way that can help guests feel comfortable. And without the identification, some of those caring gestures might be a little odd. Like you might be like, is that person hosting? Are all the guests supposed to be passing hors d'oeuvres? I think there are a couple different things you could do. I think, again, it depends on the vibe and the feel of the shower, but sometimes all the hosts will wear a special pin, and someone who's greeting will say, there were a lot of hosts for this party. We're all wearing XYZ pins. So if you see someone with that, they're a good person to ask questions to.
I like that.
I know, right? But one of the things that makes me lean name tags, I know it can feel very, but I have heard a lot of people when they get together in groups that are of mixed friends and mixed social groups, or even work groups and social groups, that it does really help in terms of identifying people, remembering names. If there's a lot of folks that you're going to be meeting who are fresh faces, it can just be really, really great to help facilitate conversation. And sometimes even adding a little something about that, like, you know, the happy couple's grandparents parents to the baby or aunt to the baby, something like that, I think could be also a way to help people understand. This sounds really big. You've got 15 people. We often recommend keeping the guest list to like 25 to 30 max, just because it's going to take so long to open gifts. And you really do want to open gifts at an event like this. But this one did not get set up like that. We've got 15 hosts. There's going to be a really big shower. Like, there's going to be a lot of people at this event. And it's why I'm leaning name tags and maybe name tags and pins or something like that. But those were my ideas for identifying who the hosts are.
Lizzie Post, you won me over. I'm endorsing your idea.
Why, thank you, cousin.
Patricia, you got 50% of a very good answer to that question. I really hope I that our answer helps. And I do hope you'll let us know how it goes.
The girls are enjoying themselves. Their fears are gone. They can look forward with pleasure to other parties. Each of the girls has learned for herself the real meaning of etiquette.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh. How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at ikea-usa.com/circular. Visit ikea-usa.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
Our next question is about babies and bereavement. Is it appropriate to invite a friend to a baby shower that has just lost a young adult son? While I know they are happy for us, I feel it would be cruel to invite them to celebrate a new child so soon after losing one of their own. At the same time, I do not want to slight them. I'm not sure how to handle it. Colleen.
Colleen, this is really thoughtful of you to just be thinking about the balance, that it could be cruel. At the same time, maybe they want to celebrate because they are happy. And it's that feeling of not knowing and the uncertainty and wanting to get it right so very much, because you know it would matter. It would make you feel good to get this right. You know it'll make them feel better if you get this right. It can feel very, very pressured and weighted on each side of it. For me, Dan, this might be an invitation that rather than just send it in the mail or with the Evite, I might call them and just check in with them and see if this is the type of event that they are interested in coming to. You know, you could let them know that you would love to have them, but you weren't sure and you wanted to be respectful. And I think sometimes hearing that caring tone in your voice and having that more personal moment and check-in about an invitation. For me, I think that's what I would be impressed with or appreciative of. And as the person doing the asking, I think it would feel the most natural rather than just choosing whether or not to surprise them with an invitation.
I took a slightly different tack, but I think my big picture thought is very similar to yours, Lizzie Post. I was thinking that it's very thoughtful to be thinking in this way, to be careful about how something that you're sending is going to be received by someone that's just gone through something very difficult or is going through something very difficult, is probably still in the grief process. Mm-hmm. Precisely because there are so many unknowns about it, I'm not sure if this would be painful or if excluding them or not inviting them would be painful. And I think I can see how both could be true. And it not being easy to get the answer, my instinct was to let them manage their reply, to say, go ahead and issue the invitation, that's what's under your control as a host, and that it's not really about, at this stage, managing whether or not they want to go, but just making it a possibility for them.
And letting them decide where they feel comfortable. Yeah.
Exactly. And in the spirit of really leaving that in their court, I was thinking make it a very simple, clean invite that you don't want to push or add a lot of weight to it or try to offer a lot of accommodations or to make it some sort of special request. At the same time,
in other words, like don't add a note to it or something like that, or
exactly.
Okay. Or interesting. Or, yeah.
And at the same time, when I was listening to the way you were describing it, I was thinking to myself, you know, that sounds very human also to give a call and extend the invitation in a more personal way. And that allows you to read the situation and read the reaction and response and add some tone to the way you deliver it that adds another layer to your communication as well. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the direction that I was initially imagining going, but I could see the advantages to it. And I think they could both be executed, I think, effectively or well. But
yeah,
what I'm hearing from both of us is don't just not invite them for fear that it might cause some sort of pain or awkwardness.
Right, right. And it is so hard because you could catch someone in the moment where that invitation is tough. You could catch someone in a moment where just the phone call asking was tough. Whether you're going the route of the invitation or you're going the route of checking in with someone before sending an invitation, they both in their own way have an element of awareness. Yours is an awareness that dealing with things a little more privately might be helpful, you know, and just putting something in front of you and letting you just I've always appreciated that about written invitations. No matter the form they come in, they allow someone to think and process for a minute without having to say anything right in the moment. And that might be the courtesy to extend. And the other one, it's the letting someone know how you're thinking of them or that you wanted to just be aware. And Dan, what I like is that both ways give you the potential when you don't know to be showing some kind of courtesy.
I think in deciding between those two options, I would really ask myself, what's my relationship with this person? Is my instinct to reach out to them and talk to them about whether or not they would appreciate being included? Mm-hmm. Or is there enough distance in that relationship that doesn't feel like a natural conversation? Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, I would err on the side of send that invitation and let them decide for themselves where they are in their process and how much they want to engage you around it in regards to this particular invitation. The concluding thought that I had is that when someone is going through grief, the support of friends and family and community is so, so, so important. And if your awareness of the difficulty that they're facing is enough that it's making you think about the appropriateness of issuing an invitation like this, to me, that's an indication that a condolence or sympathy note, if it hasn't already been sent, is definitely in order. And
very good point, Dan. Very
perhaps,
good point.
Or probably some other kind of follow-up or support that's not connected to this is something that I would definitely think about. And it may or may not be accepted. People experience grief in different ways, but whether or not it's accepted, those shows of support from the community are so, so important to people. And it sounds like this is a good moment that can serve as a reminder that offering that sort of support on its own is a really important and good thing to do as well.
Right. Make sure that's had a separate space before you either connect it to any invitation or mention it in any invitation or just send an invitation without having mentioned it. Yeah. Colleen, we are very happy for you and welcoming a new baby into the family, and we hope that our answer helps you really enjoy this wonderful community moment. Baby showers are so great and so much fun. Dan, I still remember yours, and I had such a fun time.
Thank you for your questions. Please send us updates or feedback on our answers to awesomeetiquette@emilypost.com. You can leave us a voicemail or text at 802-858-KIND. That's 802-858-5463. Or you can reach us online. Leave a comment on our Substack Monday podcast post. On Instagram, we are at @EmilyPostInst. On Facebook, we are the Emily Post Institute. Just remember, use the hashtag #AwesomeEtiquette with any social post so that we know you want your question on the show.
Want to be more active this summer? Sierra helps you save on everything from swimsuits to stand-up paddle boards, tennis rackets to fishing tackle. And if that doesn't float your boat, we also have pool floats. Sierra, let's get moving to your local store, like now. Go!
If you enjoy Awesome Etiquette, consider becoming a subscriber to our Substack by going to emilypost.substack.com. You'll get weekly content like our podcast, etiquette articles, and the inspirational Saturday Sip delivered straight to your inbox. Whether you choose the free or community member paid subscription, it's the best way to keep the etiquette conversation going and to stay up to date on all things Emily Post. And to those of you who are already with us over on Substack, thank you so much for your support. We love the conversations we've been having over there.
It's time for our feedback segment, where we hear from you about the questions we answer and the topics we cover. Today we have feedback from Alyssa about episode 452 and handwriting. Hi Dan and Lizzie, I'm a new listener to the podcast and a huge fan. Welcome.
Yay.
I've been regularly listening to your new episodes and going back and enjoying old ones, so thanks for all that you do. You frame etiquette in such a great way as it pertains to kindness and respect, and it's such a great podcast. I'm a calligrapher and invitation designer and was listening to your most recent episode, 452 Handwritten, about whether or not invitations should be hand-addressed, and wanted to throw in my two cents. As someone who loves a handwritten note, I really understand your point about a hand-addressed mailing envelope. That being said, 85% of my clients want computer-printed addresses, and I'm okay with that. I offer hand calligraphy addressing services, but because it's really time-consuming, it's very expensive, and I can understand why it's something that couples slash early on to keep their budgets in check. My couples and I work so hard to create beautiful wedding invitations, and I can understand why they, and I, would prefer beautifully designed computer-printed addresses over handwritten ones that don't connect in any way to the design and aesthetic of the invitation. There are important handwritten elements in weddings, like handwritten thank you notes. But to me, I think a well-designed printed mailing envelope sends the message to the guest that the couple has really been thinking long and hard about the event. The details are all being planned and organized, and that they will be well taken care of as guests at this event. That being said, I was asked to design my first invitation with a QR code as the RSVP method, and that felt way too newfangled for me. I do love a handwritten reply card, which many couples are doing away with. Anyways, I wanted to share my two cents, love the podcast, and also your own wedding etiquette book. Oh. Best, Alyssa.
Alyssa, thank you so much for this feedback. And I really appreciate folks who are, I don't want to say in the trenches because it's not like a war, but who are really there working with invitations, with printers, with customers on a regular basis and starting to see the trends. Getting feedback from you all is one of the ways that we can keep a finger on the pulse of what's happening, where's the trend, how are people feeling about it? And I know that cost is a really big concern, and I'm really interested to hear that from Alyssa's perspective, about 85% of her couples are choosing to not go that handwritten route. I want to hear from more calligraphers, more stationers, more printers. Let us know what you're seeing. Please help us hear more about what's going on so that we can fine-tune our advice so that it's really helpful and also inclusive. Alyssa, I'm just so happy about this advice and this feedback. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
I just want to piggyback on everything that Lizzie Poe said, Alyssa. Thank you so much for writing in, and we're so glad to hear you're enjoying the show.
Thank you for sending us your thoughts and updates. Please do keep them coming. You can send your feedback or update on our answer to awesomeetiquette@emilypost.com or leave us a voicemail or text at 802-858-KIND. That's 802-858-5463.
It's time for our postscript segment, where we dive deeper into a topic of etiquette, and today we're going to look at Emily's course recommendations in her 1951 cookbook, The Emily Post Cookbook. Lizzie Post, you found this one. Help us out. What's going on in Emily's cookbook?
What's going on in Emily's cookbook is that classic Emily, and of course, being that she was, you know, more well known for her etiquette advice than her cooking, she starts the book off really talking about some of the meals that we prepare in order to dine with others. And there are parts in this this introduction where she talks about the difference between your dinner party dishes and your everyday dishes, and how sometimes everyday dishes make it to be dinner party dishes. But the calling out kind of special dishes for having company over, especially when company is not your most intimate friends. So I like to think of that as like the difference between your pizza leftover nights, the thing in my house, it was chicken tarragon. That was the dish that my mom made. If she didn't know what else to make, she usually had chicken, rice, and green beans in the freezer. And so we could get that, like, that dinner going. And while that is a dish that would probably delight a lot of other people, it was our, like, family dish. It's not something she would necessarily serve when guests would come over, and she'd be entertaining her peers and that sort of thing. So I like Emily getting people going and thinking about the different types of entertaining that you might do and the different types of recipes you might turn to. And then she starts breaking things down into courses as well. And so I thought it would be really fun, Dan, if we went through a couple of these types of meals, so the formality of the dinner and some of the suggestions that Emily makes for them. Not all things that I would suggest now, but some good stuff in here.
Sounds good. I like it.
I have a feeling you might enjoy this one. The following suggestions are intended to serve as examples of the variety of menus, which are correct for practically every type of party a hostess could wish to give. Formal dinner. And I like that in parentheses, it's or dinner of ceremony. First course, clear soup or melon in summer. Second course, an entree or any variety of fish except panfish, eels, or boiled cod. And I'm guessing those are heavier fish in terms of flavor. Third course, fillet of beef, saddle of mutton, or roast of a very young lamb. Stuffed capon, blanched chicken breast with mushroom sauce, browned haystacks of mashed potatoes and peas are served at 99 out of 100 dinners. Fourth course, any salad with game or any aspic or cheese dish. Fifth course, ice cream, fancy cakes, candy, fruit, and afterward, black coffee. Note, bread and butter plates and butter are taboo. Typical bread would be Melba toast and finger rolls, which are placed on the tablecloth. Dan, you and I have had some conversations about that very rule recently.
Oh, yes, we have indeed. And so good to see Emily referencing the very traditional etiquette of which we're aware and which our grandmother has changed in the 100 years since.
Exactly. Mud was a part of the generation that said bread plates are becoming popular. People don't want to put stuff on the table. Cloth, especially. The next dinner that she has listed is the friendly dinner party. I think of this like her little dinner, the little kitchen dinner of four. First course, any soup your kitchen can best provide. I liked that. Second course, any dish of fish or entree that you think good, putting the power in the hostess right there. Third course, any meat except corned beef and cabbage or pork chops or hamburgers. Four, any salad. Five, any dessert. Note, perhaps you omit salad if you serve dessert or omit dessert if you serve salad. The second course is also optional. A three-course dinner is adequate if the three courses are substantial or five light courses. Clear soup or chicken croquettes or plain lettuce salad or a half meringue for dessert are all light. Thick soup, a roast with vegetables, chicken salad, hot pudding, or pie are substantial. And I love that she breaks that out for folks, you know, what would be considered substantial.
Hold just one second here.
Oh, wait, because... no, you don't think it would be substantial? Chicken salad? Well, no?
More than just as you were reading friendly dinner, and when we got to the salad course after the entree before dessert.
Feels formal,
I said
right?
to myself, that seems like that might be a bit much for the friendly dinner, even in
1951.
The 1950s, exactly. And sure enough, her little note allowed for that maybe being a little over the top.
She then goes on to have this section where she discusses things like that at dinners and lunch parties, chocolates or peppermints are served, unless it's known that nobody at the dinner, the little dinner, again, this is still all under the little dinner, eats them at all or eats sweets. Black coffee in small cups, demi-tasse specifically, is always served, just as bread and water or other beverages are taken for granted. I love this specificity. Olives, radishes, and celery are served only at a few fashionable dinner tables. Salted nuts more often. Olives or other relishes are typically served with tomato juice or other cocktails before dinner in the living room. And this I liked. Salted nuts have no place at dessert. And that cracked me up, Dan, because of the phrase soup to nuts, where nuts were coming out at the very end of the meal to just nibble on while you were seated at the table. And she's saying, no, no, no.
No, no, no,
don't,
no, no.
Don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do that. I'll continue on to the next meal that she makes suggestions for. And she gives us three different versions of a buffet lunch or supper. And I like that she puts in parentheses after it, at reasonable cost. So for this reasonable cost buffet lunch or supper, you could have first course scalloped fish in casserole, second course cold meats or stuffed eggs with vegetable salad, third course ice cream. Another version would be first course creamed oysters or crab meat Newberg, second course chicken croquettes and vegetable salad, third course two varieties of pie. I like that there are two. And then there was the other option of four courses. First course scrambled eggs and sausages. Yes, please. Second course baked macaroni. Oh, my goodness. Third course, celery salad and tomato aspic. That one threw me. And then fourth course, macédoine of fruit. And I liked the allowance for a number of different ways to go. She's showing variety. She's giving different flavors and palettes and styles. And she concludes this little section with, the menu of every buffet meal should include spaghetti and tomato, or scalloped potatoes, or a corn pudding, or any other hot and very sustaining starch vegetable. Buttered rolls, party sandwiches, a fruit cup, and coffee should be included in each menu. That's a lot! That's like a big tacked on added extra. I was very surprised by that particular closing.
It is a lot, and at the same time, it all sounds good. If I was a guest, I would appreciate that.
It's a lot of variety.
It's a little bit like her statement at the end that 99 out of 100 dinners will include a brown stack of mashed potatoes and peas, which,
yes,
again, also sounds awesome to me. And I love that was just a general expectation for Emily, but also appropriate for her to point it out because, let's be completely frank, it is not necessarily an understood expectation for everyone.
No, it is not. I appreciated and got a chuckle, especially having done so many of the recipes in this book for the Saturday Sip. It's been really fun looking through them, sometimes a bit maddening, but really fun for the most part looking through all of these and thinking about the types of things Emily might have planned or planned with her staff or been treated to at some of her friends' houses over the years and how they might have inspired the recipes that we're actually getting in this book. But it was really fun to like go through the courses with you. I knew that you would crack up at some of the things written in this little section.
Well, and let's face it, that second fish course also potentially a bit extra
for a
dinner with friends.
Yeah. Just a bit much.
Lizzie Bosett, thank you for bringing a little bit of Emily into our lives.
My pleasure.
Our party is ending. But let's hope that for you it is, in another sense, just a beginning. As you think of Betty and Bob and their problems, compare your own manners. Don't forget that it is by their manners that polite people the world around show their consideration for one another. A dinner party is just one way of enjoying company of your friends. A good meal, good company, real enjoyment, that's what a dinner party is for.
We like to end our show on a high note, so we turn to you to hear about the good etiquette you're seeing and experiencing out in the world, and we know that can come in so many forms. Today, we have a salute from Natalie.
Hello, awesome etiquette team. I hope this email finds you well. I am currently listening to your May 8th episode where you mentioned Teacher Appreciation Week. Many thanks as an educator. I wanted to give a salute to one of the Planet Fitness locations in Austin, Texas. Mm. I needed to cancel my gym membership recently due to some unexpected bills, and I was expecting to be brought through the ringer to cancel my year-long contract. However, when I actually went to the gym and asked to cancel, the employee made me feel comfortable and did not push me one way or the other. I felt respected and surprised that it was so easy. So, a big shout out to them. And thank you for a great podcast, Natalie.
Natalie, thank you so much for the salute. We love finding the appreciation in those easy moments, and it really does make us feel good when other people can use those good etiquette skills to help create an easy moment.
Oh, how delightful when your own sense of honesty is telling you that you are responsible to a contract.
Yes.
And someone essentially says, don't worry about it. It's okay. We understand. Yeah. How awesome is that?
Truly, truly awesome. Thanks so much for the salute, Natalie.
And thank you for listening.
Thank you to everyone who sent us something and to everyone who supports us over on Substack. Please do join us over there. It's a great way to keep the conversation going.
You can help us grow the Awesome Etiquette community. Share this show with friends, family, and coworkers, however you like to share podcasts.
You can send us questions, feedback, and salutes by email to awesomeetiquette@emilypost.com. By phone, you can leave us a message or text at 802-858-KIND. That's 802-858-544. On Instagram, we are at Emily Post Institute. On Facebook, we are The Emily Post Institute. Or you can leave your question in the comments thread on our Monday Substack delivery.
An ads-free version of the show is available with a paid subscription to our Substack. Find out more at emilypost.substack.com. You can also subscribe to the ads version of our show on Spotify or your favorite podcast app. And please consider leaving us a review. It helps our show ranking, which helps more people to find Awesome Etiquette.
Our show is edited by Chris Albertine and assistant produced by Bridget Dowd. Thanks Chris and Bridget.